What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Damage Report with me, Francesca Fiorentini, because it's a fantastic Monday and John had a really rough D&D night. So I am here, I'm in for him. John will be back, do not worry, but super happy to have you here. And with me again, really excited to have him, Wozni Lambre. Woz, how are you?
I'm good. I'm really happy to be back on with you. It's been way too long. I know you like had some important life things happen, but it's good that you're back here and we get to communicate with the people.
Yeah, absolutely. Bringing them all the news that is, I don't know. I wish there was something good. We're going to talk about leg lengthening in the aftermath. This is good. Very exciting. We're going to talk about leg lengthening. We're going to talk about, okay, not as exciting, a 6-year-old with a gun shooting his teacher. Cool. Obviously, a coup remix in Brazil, in terms of January 6th remix happening in Brazil. We'll get to that. But in the meantime, you guys, you know what to do. Don't act like you don't know. You like, you share, you whatever else you do. And make sure to give us a lot of love and a lot of comments. We'll be reading them in the breaks. And with that, Woz, are you ready to get this week started?
Let's do it.
All right. Let's open with this.
With 6 recorded as present, therefore, the Honorable Kevin McCarthy of the state of California, having received a majority of the votes cast, is duly elected Speaker of the House of Representatives.
Yes, just 15 votes later, first time in 100 years. And look, they're clapping like it was the first time, like they're just fresh as daisies, even though that was late on Friday night when, yes, Representative Kevin McCarthy did clinch the vote to become the House Majority Speaker for the Republicans who have been, just effing around, for lack of a better term, on this entire vote. So let's look at how it all played out, how he eventually got those votes. So early Friday, the House Republican leader had cut a deal with more than a dozen House rebels, which I don't really know if we should call them rebels, but okay. Which would entrench the power of the far right House Freedom Caucus. McCarthy announced he had reached a deal with Representative-elect Chip Roy of Texas, a leader of the Republicans who'd withheld support, on a call with Republican caucus members on Friday morning. That was the morning. So much left to happen. So after winning the support of 214 Republicans in the first round of voting Friday and the 12th overall, Representative-elect Andy Harris of Maryland flipped to McCarthy in the 13th round, still leaving McCarthy 4 votes shy of a majority. 2 pro-McCarthy Republicans, Wesley Hunt of Texas and Ken Buck of Colorado, missed the votes due to family and medical issues, but returned to DC Friday night to help elect McCarthy, which might have accounted for that lapse. Remember, these holdout Republicans have been putting everyone's lives on hold, effectively Congress on hold, the United States on hold, and people had legit funerals to attend, births to attend. So what happened later in the day? On the 14th ballot, 4 anti-McCarthy votes stuck together, while Gates and Boebert voted present, continuing to deny and exasperated McCarthy the speakership. Republicans then moved to adjourn till Monday, but amid the chaos, Gates and McCarthy struck a deal. And on the 15th and final ballot, cue music, all 6 the remaining holdout votes voting present, giving McCarthy 216 votes and a slim majority of the 428 ballots counting toward the total. Again, you have to get the majority of the present Congress people. Notice how the holdouts didn't vote for McCarthy, they voted present, but it gave him the W. And he decided to celebrate. Here's Nina Turner tweeting this picture, which is of Kevin McCarthy ordering champagne to his office, again, to go along with that rousing applause. Was just is this cause for celebration? Is it, if it was you, this is you, 15 rounds. This is like having 15 do-overs and then winning on the 15th and being like, see, always a winner.
You know, it's interesting because I don't know that there's any job in my life that I want as badly as obviously Speaker McCarthy wanted this job. And I think that's what all these guys and gals that sort of dangled it in front of him and made sure he had to beg and cajole to get it. I think that's what the Freedom Caucus, Matt Gaetz and all of those people understood quite clearly, is that Kevin McCarthy was dying to become Speaker of the House and he would do anything to get it. And in his desperation, all kinds of concessions. You know, the guy took a public beating, a public flogging. They basically embarrassed him, pantsed him, gave him a wedgie, you know, on the floor of the House. And now he gets to be Speaker. It's just, you wonder, right? We always hear politicians say, oh, we don't negotiate with terrorists. The Republican Party absolutely negotiated with the terrorists of their wing. And, you know, we'll see how it goes. But this is quite embarrassing.
Well, doesn't the saying continue that, like, once you do negotiate with terrorists, it's all chill?
I don't think.
Like, they stop becoming terrorists.
I don't think that will be the case for this guy. And, you know, let's be clear so that the viewers understand, this was never going to go any other way. These people, even the terrorists, have an agenda. And, you know, they want to chase Joe Biden's kid's penis all around the Beltway. Mm-hmm. They want to allegedly investigate the investigators in the CIA and FBI. Allegedly, they want to check out Nancy Pelosi's tax returns and all of that. Like, they have, you know, quote unquote, alleged business that they want to attend to, and they didn't have a viable alternative candidate. It was always going to go this route. They couldn't go about the business of being idiots in the Congress without this happening. But I just found this so fascinating that they felt the need to just publicly embarrass this dude this way.
Yeah, absolutely. And to show what? Like, it didn't show strength. It showed, and I think, you know, it's been said before, and we should point out that this is the Freedom Caucus. The majority of the holdouts were people who did not vote to endorse or certify the election results of 2020. Many of them do not believe that Donald Trump rightfully lost the election, that President Biden rightfully won the election. This is the caucus of election denialism, of the big lie, and of people who also aided and abetted and supported the insurrectionists and the rioters on January 6th. So let's not forget, like, we're 2 years out from January 6th. We not only didn't bring any of these elected officials to justice, we gave them more power. And Kevin McCarthy did exactly that. He gave them more power. He was unable to bring them to heel. And instead, he was like, no. Okay, yeah, please, here's more ability and here's more tools to absolutely destroy the US government. Like, go forth, right? Like, I'm surprised that they didn't have, like, they didn't pass a, we're gonna reenact the insurrection day on January 6th every day. Marjorie gets to touch QAnon shaman's abs, whatever. Anyway, but let's get to specifics. What were the concessions? What happened? How did they come to the table? So the original deal McCarthy struck with the holdouts reportedly lowers the threshold to force a vote on vacating the chair, meaning his chair, to just one member. This means it will be much easier to kick McCarthy out of the job he just won. So what does that mean? That means just Lauren Boebert could wake up on a Thursday and be like, you know what? I don't like Kevin McCarthy as Speaker. I want to be Speaker, or I just don't like him. I call a vote. One person can trigger a vote. And Waz, what are we gonna do? We're gonna redo the whole thing. The whole thing, that poor woman who's named the Republican, who just is, she's just my Karen of this moment. She's my parliamentarian Karen. We're just gonna have to start roll call all over again.
It's incredible. In the process of this guy's thirst and utter desperation for this job, he weakened himself and his own standing in said job. Like, coming into the door, he's a weaker speaker than has ever been before him. And, you know, part of me is like, maybe, you know, the way the majority works should be a little bit more democratic. Maybe speakers shouldn't be able to move so unilaterally. I mean, just take for one example, I don't know, Nancy Pelosi completely separating the sick leave from the railroad workers vote. Like, she could just do that unilaterally as far as how she brought that vote up. And so part of me thinks maybe the speaker shouldn't be so autonomous. At the same time, you know, Francesca, you just had a baby, a 3-month-old. There's just certain things that you're not gonna allow the baby to do, like mess with the sockets, hold the knife, you know, start the stove. That's how I feel with these idiots in the House. It's like, these guys can't be trusted with adult tasks.
No, they can't. If my baby could start the stove, though, she is cooking. That's, I just wanna say. When she, her little hands can move, I'll be like, you're cooking your own.
Straight to work.
Yeah. Make me eggs, thank you. No, I think that's a really good point. And there's a couple more concessions there. The deal also reportedly gives House Freedom Caucus members key slots on the House Rules Committee, as well as other committees, according to NBC News, and caps discretionary spending for 2024 at 2022 levels, putting programs such as Social Security and Medicare on the chopping block, which is like, can you do that through just these concessions and these rules? Obviously, this is all, we're relying on Kevin McCarthy and Republicans to pass the budget that funds the government later this year. So that's gonna be fun. But previous reported details of negotiations also included that the political action committees tied to McCarthy will stay out of open House primaries in safe Republican districts, which could clear the way for even more right-wing members to be elected to the House. So basically no funding can go to anyone who is not as extreme as they are. Like, if you're the speaker, and again, look, we saw what Nancy Pelosi did supporting Henry Cuellar, and Waz brings up a good point. Pelosi has way too much power in a lot of ways. But this would effectively say, yeah, no, you cannot wield the money, Republican money, right? To a member that we don't like, or to primarying anyone. Let's say there's, in Lauren Boebert's district, she narrowly lost to a Democrat in Colorado. Well, what if McCarthy wants to put up someone else who's a little more, you know, competent? No, that's completely off the table, right? So it's kind of the ways that, like, you know, I think some leftists, we look, or not even leftists, people who are left of extremists, look at this and they're like, man, I wish we could leverage some of that. But look what Kevin McCarthy just did. He just said probably what Nancy Pelosi would like to do, which is like, you can never primary an incumbent Democrat, and we're not gonna give you money. Now, they already hold out on money for those, you know, primary challenges, but this is like, in writing, we will not do that. So that's an interesting moment. I do want to just throw to Kevin, let's give him his moment. Big Kev over here. Here's his first speech as Speaker of the House.
I want to talk directly to the American people. As Speaker of the House, my ultimate responsibility is not to my party, my conference, or even our Congress. My responsibility, our responsibility, is to our country. Months ago, you voted for a new direction for our country. You embraced our commitment to America, and now we're going to keep our commitment to you. It's a commitment for an economy that's strong, where you could fill up your tank of gas and feed your family, where paychecks grow and not shrink. It's a commitment for a nation that's safe, where communities are protected, law enforcement is respected, and criminals are prosecuted.
Yes, every criminal except for those of us in this room. Obviously, this is base, and once you touch it, no one can be prosecuted. Was response to that, I just have to know before I get handed over to you. You see where Santos was sitting? You know, Mr. George Santos is right next to Gates and Boebert. Just like, what table at the cafeteria in high school is that?
I consider them to be like the kids that played hacky sack and ate outside of the lunchroom. They're not actually at a table. They are just doing their own thing. I just thought it was hilarious that he said he's doing this for America. He's doing this for the people. It seems like he's wanted to give this speech his whole damn life. And Matt Gaetz just couldn't give two rats about it. He's just like, this
no.
is absurd.
I'm over it. The American people, are you kidding me? Like, and I love how McCarthy is pretending that Republican, like after 15 rounds, like here's the other thing I will say. You are pretending like you didn't just face a huge challenge. And instead of saying, you know, I'm really glad we got here and sort of wielding your power and saying, look, I think it's important for us to get to work for the American people. And the last, you know, week has been a delay in that work. And so I look forward to working with the majority in my party in order to get things done. And yeah, we know what those things are gonna be, which is just investigating Hunter Biden's D-picks. But still, like, he couldn't even take the opportunity as now the most powerful guy in Congress to actually bring these folks in line. You already got across the finish line. You already got the votes you needed, and you can't even a little bit throw shade. Look, say what you will about Nancy Pelosi. Politically, we might disagree with her, but strategically and sort of almost, would you say, like pedagogically, I don't know. She knows how to like throw shade. She throws the most shade. Kevin McCarthy is no shade. He's just like, yes, thank you. This was so easy. Like, don't pretend. We all saw you and you look stupid by not actually kind of naming what just happened and wielding your power a little bit more. Maybe that's just me. But anyway, there he was. Nothing happened. We're gonna get to work. And by work, we mean cutting taxes for the wealthy. And we'll get into a little bit more about what he's going to do. We're talking about the IRS later. But why don't we turn to the most important angle, according to him. There's one person who believes that he, and he alone, deserves the credit for getting Representative Kevin McCarthy across the finish line to become a majority speaker of the House. And of course, that guy is Donald Trump. And why don't we turn to this, what are we calling it? Bleat? Here's the bleat. Donald Trump bleeding. The fake news media was, believe it or not, very gracious in their reporting that I greatly helped Kevin McCarthy attain the position of Speaker of the House. Thank you. I did our country a big favor. So these people that I hate actually gave me credit. Thank you. Thank me. I'm just gonna pat myself on my own back. So yes, apparently Trump placed a potentially critical phone call to Representative Matt Gaetz, whose present vote solidified McCarthy's defeat on the 14th ballot late Friday night. But the former president also spoke on the phone with Representative Andy Biggs, another vocal McCarthy holdout. Remember, these are people who then were able to flip their votes and did in fact vote for him. So I want to just name the fact that Donald Trump had been advocating for Kevin McCarthy on a lot of news media outlets. They knew that he was pro McCarthy. And even Lauren Boebert said, look, I love Donald Trump, that he's my favorite president, but I would almost ask for him, I believe she said, I would ask for him to reconsider. Did she have any other names in mind? No, not really, but reconsider. In other words, this was a moment was where the actual Freedom Caucus, the Trump Caucus, the MAGA Caucus was going against Donald Trump himself. And that, I think, presented the biggest, like, what's happening? Is there a new Trump? Will it be George Santos? Like, why are they breaking with him only to then, I don't know, what was the play there, I guess, is my question.
This just feels like a sort of neighborhood issue, right? Like, it's just neighbors squabbling as far as these little pissants in the house. Like, they just feel like this is their fight. Trump sort of hovers above all of this stuff. Like, obviously, he's going to be their next candidate for president, which is clearly a way bigger job and a way bigger deal. And this is just petty score settling between people who are in the House of Representatives, right? Back in the days, again, like, people got to understand the Boberts and the Matt Gaetzes of the world, they used to be very, very far from the power. Yes. They could be counted on to gin up votes, to rile people up. They might even work in, you know, the campaigns and the operations to get people elected, but they never held any actual power. However, you know, the footsie that these guys have played with the lunatic fringe of the right has resulted in, yo, these guys aren't just people you patronize for votes, you know, every November, right? Like, these people are actually now part of the power apparatus, and they're wielding that power. Yep. And they're doing it in ways that, you know, the establishment doesn't like. And, you know, as detrimental as it is to the country, it's quite hilarious to watch unfold.
It is. It is. And it is also hilarious to watch Kevin McCarthy, who has always tread this line with Donald Trump of, you know, hey, call off your dogs, call off your boys on January 6th. They are your people, they're not Antifa. To see him sort of try to skate this line and then have it bite him in the ass is very interesting. But of course, he's got to kiss the ring. And don't worry, that rift is ending, because McCarthy, at the end of the day, still kisses the ring of Donald Trump. And here he is thanking him for his support.
But I do want to especially thank President Trump. I don't think anybody should doubt his influence. He was with me from the beginning. Somebody wrote the doubt of whether he was there, and he was all in. He would call me and he would call others. And he really was, I was just talking to him tonight, helping get those final votes. What he's really saying, really for the party and the country, that we have to come together. We have to focus on the economy. We've got to focus, make our borders secure. We got to do so much work to do. And he was a great influence to make that all happen. So thank you, President Trump.
We got to do so much work to do. And with that begins the 118th Congress, led by Republicans, to do the work to do, 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 to do. That's it. That's pretty much what's going to happen. But there he is. He's got to go back to Trump. I don't know. We'll see. Come 2024, will they all support him as president again? Waz, any final thoughts before we take a break?
I just love Kevin McCarthy just giving it up to Trump. Just like, yeah, he's great. He was with me the whole time. It took 15 votes for me to get in, but Donald Trump, he was there from the beginning. He's great. He's my father. I love him. It's just, it's pathetic.
Yes, I'm reminded of Anna Kasparian, you know her, saying that this is an entire party of beta males who pretend and are so obsessed with being the alpha, but they are complete betas when it comes to Donald Trump. All right, we got to take a break, but there is so much more on the other side of this. Welcome back to the Damage Report. I am Francesca Fiorentini in for John Iadarola. Here with me, Waz Lambre. We have more news. This was just, wow, was a sleepy Sunday, but not so sleepy down in South America. Yes, cooing in the time of Facebook. That's what it looks like right there. That is Brasilia, the capital of Brazil. That is National Congress. And those are supporters of former President Jair Bolsonaro, who believe that Jair Bolsonaro unjustly lost the election. And there they are, storming the Brazilian capital, where Brazilian lawmakers are. It was a Sunday, so thankfully people were not in session. Perhaps a little bit less dramatic than our January 6th, but pretty much the Trumpian version down in South America, down in Brazil, and everyone is called Jair Bolsonaro, the Trump of South America. So there we are, and obviously the president-elect Lula da Silva, has tweeted and put out a statement saying, "I was just tonight at the Planalto Palace at the STF. The coup plotters who promoted the destruction of public property in Brasilia are being identified and will be punished. Tomorrow we will resume the work at the Planalto Palace. Democracy always. Good night." So that was his response. He also continued saying, "Whoever did this will be found and punished. Democracy guarantees the right to free expression, but it also requires people to respect institutions. There's no precedent in the history of the country. What they did today, for that, they must be punished." Okay, so Lula da Silva, current president, is out with a strong statement about it. Again, a little bit, Trump was in power at the time. Unlike Biden was not in power, obviously, during our January 6th. But what the hell happened? And we'll look at a little bit more footage. But around 3,000 people took part in what initially started as a demonstration in Brasilia, according to local media. They also flooded parts of the Congress building with the sprinkler system and damaged furniture in the presidential palace and the Supreme Court building. While Congress was not in session, protesters reportedly threatened employees if they tried to block their entry into the building. But authorities said late Sunday they cleared the Congress, Supreme Court, and presidential palace offices of rioters. At least 300 people had been arrested. So a couple more images and video from that in case you needed a closer look. Here is a mounted police officer trying to get a hold of the crowd, and watch what the crowd does. Great. So now we're just attacking horses and police officers on them. Amazing. Law and order. Yes, I love authoritarianism. So there you go. There is also a man who apparently stole the Constitution, which I'm sure our January 6th rioters are jealous of. Take a look at this. Hell yeah. This is the book I'm disrespecting at the moment. Was when you saw this go down and just the parallels to our own attempted coup, again by radicalized boat dads, what were your thoughts?
You know, it's funny. What strikes me when I watched the original, the OG, if you will, January 6th. What struck me at first was just that these guys ran into the Capitol and they're gonna seize the day and they're gonna seize power. And all they did was take selfies, you know, guys with their shirts off. It was just a photo op for so many of them, which ended up being their demise in the sense that they're in prison now for having done it. At least these Brazilians, this guy had the sense to cover his face as he's committing a felony. You know, at least this guy had the sense. But yeah, it's funny, you know, that these people don't understand that you can't perform a coup without the help of and aid of the military. But you know, if people want to let their anger out, and there's plenty of people on the right wing that will fan the flames of these dispossessed people. But you know, this is sad. It's stupid, honestly. Yeah. This, you're not gonna seize power this way. What a lot of people don't understand is that Lula actually made some deals with the elites of the country, the people who actually wield influence over things like capital and the military. And so these people are just being used as pawns, and you know, it's all performance and stupidity. But you know, that's universal in both of our countries, apparently.
Yes, indeed. And I think that's a really important point that, like, it was pretty disorganized, right? All folks are doing is just filming themselves. Again, just incriminating themselves from the future. Like, if you really wanted to learn the lesson of January 6th, it's like, don't live stream it, buddy. But there they were, and the folks were aimless, just sort of walking around. Do we have that footage of them just sort of walking around the quarters? Okay, but anyway, there's no real plan. There's not a, you know, as someone who's participated in sit-ins and we understand the history of nonviolent direct action, and like, although this wasn't nonviolent, there's not even a plan to be like, and we're not leaving until Bolsonaro is instated. No, they're not gonna lock down. They're not, you know, calling a new government to order. They're just there to wreak havoc and chaos. Now, I know what you guys were wondering, but do they have a QAnon shaman? And the answer is, yes, they do. Take a look. Here he is, the Brazilian version of the QAnon shams. Hell yeah, look at him, looking great. He's got a headdress instead of, you know, what is it, raccoon tails. Got the Brazilian flag painted all over himself. But he's got the khakis. Make sure to have the khakis. He doesn't have as many tats. But you know, this is, I think for me, it is absolutely clear that this is not a coup of Latin American coups, which again, as Waz mentioned, usually carried out by the military, often with the support of the United States. And it's not a parliamentarian coup, which we've seen as of late in places like Bolivia, Paraguay, most recently, although questionably in Peru. But this is absolutely the stuff of strongman internet radicalized nightmares, right? This is something that trickled down, that was globalized, if you will. Yeah, it was globalized, internationalized by people like Donald Trump and the followers that he had on January 6th. They learned it from him. And so for me, what I keep on coming back to is, these are the folks who consistently say that, oh, the left and like Democrats, they just care about globalism. It is code, obviously, for their anti-Semitism, but they continually say, oh, they put other countries first, this and that. No. You don't understand. Authoritarianism is global. Strongman ideology is global. Fascism is global. These are the Orbans. Why do you think CPAC was held in Hungary? Why do you think that Donald Trump loves Jair Bolsonaro? Why do you think Bolsonaro, we'll talk about where he's at, why do you think he was at Mar-a-Lago over New Year's? Why do you think Steve Bannon connects people like Nigel Farage, part of Brexit, to Donald Trump, to, you know, Duterte, right? This is the true internationalism of the right. It is the far right extremist fringe, and they love learning from one another. They love it, right? If Donald Trump gets a second bite at the apple, he's gonna take a page out of Duterte's book and be like, yeah, let's lock up anyone, and no, let's kill drug addicts. Let's do it. Why not? Anyway, where is Bolsonaro? What did he say? Bolsonaro has been in Florida this entire time. We've seen him walking around. I believe it was Orlando. We've seen him eating KFC. We've seen him just shopping at a grocery store, doing finger guns at the camera of the guy who was filming him. But alas, he's currently in the hospital, guys. He really needs to focus on his gut health. He has checked into a hospital in Florida with abdominal pain. He has numerous health problems since surviving a stabbing in 2018. That is right. In case you're feeling a little pang of sympathy, don't have sympathy. This man is an incredible bigot and a fascist, and absolutely deserves to feel abdominal pain. I'm not saying he deserves to be stabbed, but he deserves to have some abdominal pain. He was taken to the hospital for tests on Monday after feeling abdominal discomfort. He is all right, Faria told Reuters, confirming earlier local news reports that the president was taken to the army hospital in Brasilia for tests. I think he's not in Brasilia, however. He will stay in the hospital overnight. Two things. One is that He did put out a statement, so I want to go to what Jair Bolsonaro, former president of Brazil, did say about the insurrection in Brasilia. He says, peaceful demonstrations in the form of law are part of democracy. However, depredations and invasions of public buildings as occurred today, as well as those practiced by the left in 2013 and 2017, escape the rule. Sort of a rough translation there, but he's effectively saying, don't do this, guys. This is illegal. But the left did it in 2013 and 2017. So kind of a wink, wink, nod, nod. Maybe they do it too. So it's okay to do it. And I also want to note that he's been in the United States, Waz, and he, a lot of folks, including, I believe Representative Castro, Julian Castro said, or Joaquin Castro, my bad. Joaquin Castro said, we need to extradite Bolsonaro from the United States back to Brazil, right? He doesn't belong in the United States, abdominal pain or not. Why is he seeking refuge here in the United States? I mean, again, just another sort of Latin American dictator seeking refuge in Florida, nothing really new. But what do you make of that?
I don't know. It's just funny that everybody ends up in Florida at some point, whether it's like mafia guys on the run or in witness protection or, you know, deposed former right wing presidents slash dictators just ends up in Florida. It's just something in the water over there, I guess, where people, you know, enjoy it. You know, it's interesting politically. You know, why would the United States be cool with harboring this guy, knowing all the things that he's involved with down there in Brazil? But again, like Florida is just, it's just a rest haven for all kinds of people from north, south, east, west. They just love it there, friend.
They really do. And, you know, and Mar-a-Lago too. There's always a bed open. The last thing I wanted to mention is that apparently while he has been at Mar-a-Lago, Bolsonaro has been getting some political advice from the likes of Stephen Miller and Steve Bannon. The Steves. The Steves are on the case. Again, back to my globalism remark. They're trying to give him pointers and tips on where to go from here. I would say F off into the night. Maybe Steve Bannon would say something different. In fact, Bannon truthed, I believe, bleated Brazilian freedom fighters with a video or a news outlet, a news caption, breaking: Bolsonaro supporters have stormed the National Congress. Brazilian freedom fighters. If there was any question, I mean, these people keep on incriminating themselves. Here we have recommendations to criminally charge the former president Donald Trump, and you've got his, one of his top advisors saying these are freedom fighters. Like, the evidence is just endless. And again, it's gonna continue unless any of these people are held accountable. Waz, before we leave this, my question is, are we gonna see more accountability in Brazil, right? In then the supposed greatest democracy on earth? Will Lula actually hold some folks accountable for what happened, or, you know, faster than we've done in this state, in this country?
Man, it's hard to say, because as I mentioned earlier, he did cut deals with a bunch of elites, and obviously they're gonna want their bidding done. And then there's the work that he wants to do for actual people. So you wonder how much political will be behind score settling and holding these fools accountable. Like, you wonder if he has, if they have the bandwidth, if Lula's government will have the bandwidth to handle their obligations and prosecute these fools. And I do want to say something to, you know, you're mentioning, I think, quite a astutely of the global solidarity of people on the right. I think Bannon understands that any movement, any right-wing movement, needs to have a global lens. And he needs to be explaining to people on the right that there are wins happening. People need to see their movement, their ideology winning anywhere, somewhere. And if you can connect the wins, even however you know, pitiful this win might be. A bunch of guys taking selfies during a quote unquote riot. He's gonna do that. And I think on the left, we have a harder time connecting left wing wins globally. But yeah, as Steve Bannon, he's a lot of things, but he's not an idiot. And mm-hmm. he does understand the need to connect a global right wing movement to things that we're doing here in America. And so, yeah, this is, you know, it's sad, but yeah, Steve Bannon is doing what he's meant to be doing.
Yes. Being the sort of like evil Wizard of Oz, the like fashy Wizard of Oz, just covered in liver spots. Anyway, with that, we'll keep on this story, of course. But we gotta take our second break. There's so much more after this. All right, a little bit time left in this hour, but of course there's more in the aftermath. Let's open with this little interesting turn.
The Democrats stripped you of your committee assignments after you were elected. That was raw politics. Mm-hmm. But in fairness, didn't you also say around that period that you had been a follower of QAnon conspiracy theories and you had rethought this and you were no longer influenced by the group?
Well, like a lot of people today, I had easily gotten sucked into some things I'd seen on the internet. But that was dealt with quickly early on. I never campaigned on those things. That was not something I believed in. That's mm-hmm. not what I ran for Congress on. So those are so far in the past.
Oh, Marjorie Taylor Greene with a fresh blowout and a new perspective on Q, but kind of an admission that she did fall down a rabbit hole, that she was just bored and online and middle class and white. And she's no longer part of or believing in the QAnon stuff. And, you know, that was the old her. And she didn't campaign on, you know, stopping the pedophiles, but she will occasionally talk about it from time to time, but now we're using groomers. But that was a very interesting turn for Marjorie Taylor Greene. She's trying to run away from it. That was with an interview with Kurtz, I believe his last name is Kurtz, interviewing him for Media Buzz. It's a right wing outlet. It's probably why she was a little bit more forthcoming. Nearly a dozen Republicans joined Democrats to strip Marjorie Taylor Greene of her committee assignments. Remember when that happened? And it was largely due to past comments on her social media pages, which Ms. Greene liked, that explicitly expressed support for murdering political officials, including then Speaker Nancy Pelosi. Fun. Ms. Greene's attempts to distance herself from QAnon largely mirror past statements she's made in the run up to the House vote to condemn her and strip her committee memberships when she fought in vain to stop the impending retribution. Remember, she hasn't really been able to do anything since assuming office. Like, Marjorie Taylor Greene is just, again, a meme. She has a podcast, which I'm sure she spends more time on than she does legislating. And so I'm curious, going forward, what committees will she be on now? Will she do anything? Do these people even pay attention when they are told this is how a bill becomes a law? I.e. when Schoolhouse Rocks is put on because they will not pay attention to anything else. Waz, what do you think? Is she trying to clean up her image? Is Q done? Like, is that so 2022?
I think a couple of things. You know what this reminds me of? It reminds me of AOC, honestly. And the ability for the establishment to sort of funnel people who are on the fringes into the center. Whip people into line. If you want to advance in your career as a political person, you will have to come to heel. The system is built that way. It's set up that if you want to achieve, if you want to make your time useful here, you got to play ball. And that's all I'm seeing from Marjorie Taylor Greene here. She's like, nah, I kind of like being influential. I kind of like having a voice. I'm going to fall in line and I'm going to play ball. But I'll say this. It's just, you know, just some human sympathy, man. There used to be all kinds of things on the internet that I believed, Francesca. I mean, they used to kill Eminem damn near every other week on the internet. And I thought it was true every single time. I know a lot of black people, especially people in my neighborhood, we'd read these conspiracies about Donna Karen or Tommy Hilfiger went on Oprah allegedly and said that, you know, they hate black people and shouldn't wear their clothes. Somehow this footage never materialized of of these people saying these deeply racist things. So I understand how she fell into the Q thing, because I too used to fall victim to internet lies, Francesca.
Sure. No, and look, you are not an elected official, and those are lies about Tommy Hilfiger and not a dark lord who is secretly
Hillary Clinton running a sex child ring out of a pizza shop.
Yes, yes. Your lies have arguably not gotten people killed. I don't know. I don't know if Mr. Hilfiger had to add another security personnel to his detail. But look, I don't give Green like any passes here. She utilized QAnon to get where she is. We saw her on the campaign trail give a wink and a nod to Q. Whether or not she fully believed it, who cares? She, in bad faith, utilized the QAnon sort of talking points and gave a nod and a wink to that community and that like sect, that cult, and to get where she is. So whatever. Anyway, there's a little bit more in this interview. Again, she's being a little bit more forthcoming. Here she is on Kevin McCarthy's election and also the certification of the 2020 election. Take a look.
When things got heated, you said this about Congressman Chip Roy of Texas. He refused to object on January 6th. That's not what our base wanted. So a lot of the people who were backing Kevin McCarthy also didn't vote to certify the Electoral College results for Joe Biden. Do you think that's an important thing to the base even today?
Oh, it's very important. Well, what I was pointing out is the same people that conservatives were holding up in high esteem don't necessarily have those voting records while they're at the same time criticizing Kevin McCarthy, who does.
Right.
Kevin McCarthy did object on January 6th, and he's been a top target of the Democrats and the January 6th committee.
So do you believe that Joe Biden is a legitimately elected president?
Of course Joe Biden's the president. That's always a silly question.
Okay, I wasn't trying to be silly. I was trying to just clarify.
Do you think she's cleaning it up for Fox a little bit, Waz?
It's what they do. When you get told that you have a chance to go far within the party and the establishment, you gotta clean up, or what they deem to be cleaning up, right? Like with the Democrats, people on the left, like, whoa, you can't talk about the Israeli right wing regime in a negative fashion. We don't do that here in the Democratic Party. You can't be opposed to, you know, apartheid in Israel. Like, come on now, we don't do that in the Democratic Party. And on the right, it's the same thing. It's like, look, man, you can let your freak flag fly on this right wing stuff, but there's just certain things we don't do. I think, again, she is one of the top fundraisers in the party. And so they understand that she's a money machine. And so that's her use to them. And the more that she plays ball, the more that she will ascend, the more that she will accrue influence within the party. So it's a mutually beneficial thing, but this is what they do. Like I say AOC, not because she's anything similar. Like she's not a left-wing Marjorie Taylor Greene. It's the sense that whenever you are sort of even a little bit outside of what the established norms of the people in power are on, they're gonna come down on your ass. We remember when AOC was crying up there in the Congress because she had to do that little vote on Israel, and she was like, oh, I don't wanna do it. But guess what? Somebody told her that if you wanna become president, you wanna go further in this thing, you gotta play ball. And that's what she does. And the same thing happens on the right. Like Marjorie Taylor Greene, she wants to go from being a backbencher to a main player. And you know, they spanked her. They said, hey, get in line, lady.
I think that's a really interesting point, because here you have her holding out on Kevin McCarthy for a long time and then eventually voting for him. Pom pom waving. And now I think you're totally right. Trying to clean up her image in order to, yes, be a main player, to get committee positions, to have more power, to remain in office. Look, I think that the lesson, I think a lot of people were looking at Boebert's election and going, I don't want that to be me. Granted, the districts are very different. You know, Marjorie Greene in Georgia there. But also notice the question. And the question and the thing that Republicans did is they painted themselves into the corner with this question of the 2020 election. You can never actually, because what she has to do, right? You have to appease the base. You don't want to lose the base So she just said Joe Biden is president, right? Now, she probably means like illegitimately. But she said he was president, which might piss some of the base off, but then also that the 2020 election was in fact stolen. So it's sort of like she's trying to have it both ways, and every Republican is going to be in that corner. Ron DeSantis, if he tries to go against Trump, will be in that same corner that Republicans painted themselves into. Here you have Marjorie Greene again trying to walk that line.
There's the awkwardness, Francesca, of like, a lot of these Republicans got elected in the same cycle as Joe Biden. So yeah. It's like, which one is it? Is his fraudulent or yours? Like, what is going on?
Yes, we have to wrap there, but there is more in the aftermath on YouTube. Thank you guys so much. We'll see you there.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.